From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell him Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 159 of Little Brother for the 2nd of March, 2025. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. So, let's get started. Clarksdale, Mississippi is a city of about 15,000 people where you will find a small town newspaper named the Clarksdale Press Register. Of course, like any newspaper, they've gone digital, with everything that implies. That is to say, content is now instantly available online and, more importantly, it can be altered or removed at any time. As a side note, this is the reason I mentioned in the last episode that you need to capture content when you see it. Anyway, the newspaper published an editorial, as newspapers tend to do. This editorial was critical of the city government, specifically calling out the mayor and the city council for voting themselves large pay raises. The newspaper now finds itself under a temporary restraining order issued by Hinds County Judge Crystal Wise, demanding that the newspaper remove the editorial from its website. This is probably not the end of it, as this order is so incredibly, obviously unconstitutional in that it is a violation of the First Amendment. The outward appearance is that the city government were aware of this because the paper was served by taping a copy of the service to a public bulletin board. Technically, that's legal, but that was clearly intended to make sure that the defendant, the newspaper that is, never got the message that they were expected to come to court. The city won by default. Speaking of censorship, the various social media platforms are, as I've mentioned a number of times, private property, and participants are subject to whatever rules and whims that the proprietors desire. Even so, there are times that the action is clearly underhanded, such is the case with a move made recently by X, formerly and better known as Twitter. Any attempt to post a link to Signal Private Messenger on the platform will simply fail. There is speculation that the reason for this is that Doge is attempting to prevent federal employees from organizing privately. Speaking of Elon Musk, a week and some change ago, Ukraine was threatened that they would lose access to the Starlink internet service if the Ukrainian government wasn't going to sign a minerals deal with the U.S. I'm going to get uncharacteristically political here for a second when I say this, but tough. With the absolute fiasco of a meeting that happened in the Oval Office on Friday, where Vance and Trump opted to scold President Zelensky to his face on live television rather than letting Zelensky sign over Ukraine's minerals, it's clear to me that Ukraine is about to have one fewer internet options. Speaking of internet providers, under the new administration, the Federal Communications Commission, or FCC, having been gutted like most agencies, is expected to be less aggressive about enforcement actions. This leaves the states to step in. New York State has done this, and is now requiring that internet service providers operating in the state offer a $15 option which has suitably modest bandwidth. This has apparently sparked fear in the ISP industry, as they are no longer able to lobby one agency, but now must lobby 50. Lastly, the DFLAC website that I mentioned in episode 155, a site which hosts a crowdsourced map showing where automatic license plate readers are located, has been sued by FLAC Security, one of the major vendors of such readers, and the one from which the site's name is derived. Since they, meaning FLAC Security, have nothing better to go on, they've chosen to go after DFLAC for violating FLAC's trademark, because of that name derivation. Well, the site is being represented by none other than the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and their lawyers have, point by point, shredded FLAC's cease and desist letter, they have shredded the case, and they ended it with a blanket declaration that DFLAC has no intention of ceasing or desisting. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwned This Time. This is going to be a slightly unusual round. Typically, I'll talk about who suffered a breach and how bad, but this time, this is more like a game of fuck around and find out. So, Brian Krebs, on his blog Krebs on Security, is reporting that the new administration in Washington has made cuts to cyber protection and consumer protections. Yep, that means that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, has been gutted. This is a problem, because they provide assistance to the private sector and direct support to federal government to protect all of us against cyber attacks. Meanwhile, The Record is reporting that our new Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, has ordered the U.S. Cyber Command to stand down in respect to planning for attacks from Russia. That's really incredibly specific. Right, so what happened? Well, it seems like the Lockbit ransomware gang has been taunting our new FBI director, Kash Patel, over an alleged leak of classified information. Now, let's talk for a second about Lockbit. Their motivations, on the whole, are financial. They make bank extorting payments from their ransomware victims, or selling their victims, they call them customers, selling their victims' data, or both. Now, when interviewed, the members of Lockbit denied being Russian, and yet they post on Russian language forums and freakishly avoid taking on Russian targets. So, you know, judge for yourself, but I think that that claim of theirs not to be Russian is, shall we say, somewhat economical with the truth. But yeah, knock down our cybersecurity defenses, specifically stop guarding against our biggest adversary, and boom, we get pwned. Nice job. Now, I am sure that by now, you've all heard about the thing that the Federal Office of Personnel Management is doing, and I believe this is under the direction of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE, where they are directing federal employees to send an email every week listing 5 bullet points about what they did in the past week. Rolling Stone is reporting that apparently the email addresses have come to be known, and that the result has been that the email addresses have received a lot of very rude responses. As responsible Americans, we cannot have that. So, as a public service, I would like to make you aware, make sure that you are all aware of the email addresses to make sure that you do not accidentally send any rude comments or responses to them. The original email address was hr@opm.gov. Unfortunately, the heavy load of undesirable responses, largely from the general public, has forced them to stop using that one. Nonetheless, I'd like to advise you to keep that one in mind just to make sure that you don't accidentally send anything rude to it by mistake. That said, it seems as though the solution has been to use some addresses to which they have added a number, with the initial set being hr1@opm.gov through hr20@opm.gov. So please make sure that you do not accidentally send rude emails to those addresses. Now, it's likely that they'll expand the set a bit, but now that you know the general pattern, I trust that my listeners will exercise the appropriate caution and courtesy not to accidentally send emails, especially not rude ones, to these addresses that will end up clogging up the Doge servers with junk content. We have got a listener letter today coming to us from Mickey Metz, who writes, "Love your podcast, and I have a question." Thank you for writing, Mickey. Let's hit that question. He continues, "Good advice on being safer in chat rooms when organizing and using Signal. The point I raise is about who is hosting the instance of Jitsi that you are using. It's very easy for a bad actor to host a server running Jitsi, and how does one vet a host?" Well, in a nutshell, Mickey, my first-hand experience with Jitsi is from the pandemic. When the Albany 2600 was using Jitsi to meet virtually during the pandemic, we would just use the instance hosted by Jitsi themselves at jit.si, and we really didn't give much thought to it beyond that. A couple of us did look into the possibility of hosting it ourselves, and I was one of the folks who looked at it since I run a server at home, and I have gigabit fiber available to me here in Schenectady. If I had done so, the vetting would have basically been on my reputation within the group. On a side note, it is worth noting that 2600 meetings are held in public places, and they are open to the public, so they're really more about openness than security. So maybe that's a bad example, but it is the one that I have. However, I also know that hosting is something that's not available to everyone. Certainly, it requires a minimum level of technical expertise to build the server, get the service where it can be found, and keep it running and patched. That leads to finding folks who host it who are reliable, and I don't think I have an answer for that. I think if you were going to go with a commercial hosting provider, you'd have to find a small shop where you can get to know the people doing the work, but there's ultimately a component of trust. Anyway, Mickey's letter continues. He says, "I was surprised that BigBlueButton.org was not mentioned. I've been hosting an instance for a few years with Transparency. The server is hosted by a person I trust and have gotten to know over 3 years." Well, you see, that's kind of what I was talking about a minute ago. You find somebody that you trust to host it. As for BigBlueButton, I hadn't heard of it until you mentioned it to me in your letter. But I have looked into it, and it seems to me as though it's a valid solution on the grounds that it can be hosted wherever you want and whenever you want. You know, you can find a trustworthy host and off you go. But I was more focused on solutions that don't require you to secure hosting of any kind. Jitsi is available and ready to go, hosted for free by Jitsi, and Signal is likewise. Bringing either one of them into an organization is as simple as telling people to grab an app from their app store, and off you go. Mickey continues, "My site, communitybridge.com, is running BBB, that's Big Blue Button, obviously, and offers encryption as well as privacy and the opportunity to know and trust your host. Yet people do not seem to value human connection over convenience very much, hoping you can give me a glimpse at what I'm doing wrong. Well, yes, Mickey, I kind of alluded to that a moment ago. If you want to get people to participate, making it easy is the fastest way to get people to participate. People are busy, and trying to figure out a solution in the few spare moments that we have is tricky. I don't think you're doing anything wrong here, except maybe expecting too much out of people. Anyway, thank you very much for writing, Mickey. For the rest of my listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation as well, please send me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com as Mickey did, if you'd like to add your voice to the conversation. We have a little bit of privacy and personal OPSEC news that might be of interest. Let's start with Apple in the UK. The UK has recently passed a law that requires that law enforcement agencies have the ability to access encrypted cloud-stored content. Essentially, this would require that the highest level of security that is available to Apple's iPhone and macOS users on iCloud would need to be equipped with a backdoor for the authorities to use to access whatever you have stored there. Apple have expressed that they have no interest in doing that, and so instead they have simply removed this level of security from UK users. And honestly, this approach makes sense. It is much more sensible from Apple's perspective to make it clear that the highest level of security is not available, more sense than to let their customers think that their data is secure. On a similar note, Signal Private Messenger has clashed with the authorities in Sweden. In this case, there's a bill that hasn't yet become law, but it's got the same basic tenor. Essentially, if it becomes law, it will require that encrypted apps like Signal put backdoors in place that enable the authorities to reach the encrypted content. Signal Foundation CEO Meredith Whitaker has stated, quote, "If you create a vulnerability based on Swedish wishes, it would create a way to undermine our entire network. Therefore, we would never introduce these backdoors," end quote. Instead, Signal have indicated that if the bill becomes law, they will just simply stop offering their services in Sweden. Of course, those of us in the cryptographic community have been fighting this fight for a very long time. I've been in this since the 1990s. To that end, there is one particular nation that has come up again and again and again and again and again, and that is my own. Here in the US, the FBI is warning iPhone and Android users that they want lawful access to all of your encrypted data. It seems that, once again, they too want backdoors. Anybody remember the Clipper chip? For listeners who use Android devices, I wanted to share with you a new feature found on Android and talk you through how to shut it the hell off. The new feature is called Safety Core, and it's a feature that scans the photos on your device, makes a determination if any of them are not safe for work, and when one is opened on your device, it blurs it and requires an extra tap to reveal the content. Thanks? So the problem it's trying to solve is pretty obvious, but there are better ways to solve it. It also introduces a new problem. The problem it introduces is that your phone is scanning your photos. So let's start by solving that one, shall we? open your setup menu by pulling down the top of the screen twice and tapping on the gear icon. When you're in the settings, scroll down to Apps and Notifications and tap that. The next screen will show your most recently used three or so apps. Under that is a link that says See All Apps. It might include a number of installed apps, so mine, for instance, says See All 73 Apps. Tap that. In the upper right, tap the Find icon and search for Security Core, which is all one word. Tap it and select either Disable or Uninstall, and it is gone. Now, let's solve the problem the right way. Tap the back button a few times to get back out to the main page of your settings. Scroll down to System and into Multiple Users. In the Multiple Users menu, turn the feature on if it is not on. Now, add a user and create a second Android account for your Not Safe for Work content. To switch between that and your main user, you just pull down the top of the screen, and two icons to the left of the gear icon is a person in a circle. If you tap that, you can pick the user. Unlock it, and off you go. Use a different passcode or a pattern for that user and your main one, and it will keep all of your Not Safe for Work content segregated from your main content, encrypted separately, and out of reach. As usual, we'll end the show with the fail of the fortnight. Back in episode 136, I talked about how the state authorities here in New York screwed up an emergency alert. An alert went out via the emergency alert system to advise people of an Amber Alert. And the alert contained no real information except for a URL. That URL went to a poorly formatted document that was confusing if it rendered correctly and useless if you tried to render it on a mobile device. On top of that, there was no useful information actually in the message, meaning that you pretty much had to follow the URL, which you couldn't do without unlocking your phone, being in a place that had service, and in the process of unlocking your phone, possibly causing the message to disappear on some devices. Well, they've done it again. A couple of weeks ago, the state authorities sent out an alert that, I will say, at least told you what the problem was straight away. The warning said, quote, heavy snow, high winds are causing whiteout conditions. Avoid traveling until tomorrow morning, end quote. Okay, that part was useful. It continues by offering more info and a URL. A bit.ly URL. Now, if you're lucky enough to be able to copy the URL, a bit.ly URL is good enough. If you've got to try to remember it long enough to type it because it disappeared when you unlocked your device, forget it. They have impenetrable codes because the goal is to make the URL short, not memorable. And after all of that, let us suppose that you managed to go through all of the trouble necessary to actually get to the URL. Where does it go? It goes to a very general page full of winter driving tips. Oh. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Funkaboo and the Helix Foundation for web hosting support. Shout out to the Albany 2600 Group. Special thanks to Mickey Metz, Azriel, David, Joe Cadillac, Thriller at Play, Ron, Julie Bernstein, Kylo Ren, and Knight Rider 007 for story leads. Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwnt music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Privacy News music is Capricorn Mix by Leander. Our Fail of the Fortnite music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker, and our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 160 will drop on March 16th. Stay safe and be well.
We did the thing!